20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Happy Tuesday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. You can find my friend here at Justice Mosqueda on social media, or at J-U-M-O-S-Q, I should say, on social media. You can find Justice over on acmepackingcompany.com, where you should be getting your daily Packers news anyway. Justice, it's great to be back chatting with you. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great. Cut my hair, shave my beard. All the good stuff. I had to go to a baby shower this weekend, and it was nice outside, and I didn't want to look like a bum. Just sweating.
What's your ideal facial hair situation? Is this like a shave off because it's easy? Is this like what's your ideal situation?
Yeah, I think it's like this, honestly, because I grew it out, but I don't get anything on the sides, right? So I get like this natural goatee. So you guys saw it. If you guys saw the other videos, that was the longest it's ever been for me, and it just grows down. And I'm learning I don't like the it just grows down look. So, gotcha. Yeah, probably won't be doing that ever again. Probably keep it like this.
There you go. Basically, you're all set. Looking fresh and clean, my friend. We've got a lot to get into. We are 9 days away from the NFL draft, which seems beyond crazy. I know you and I think both have a love-hate with this, where it's like almost time where the draft is here, but also I will take as much time as possible to watch as many players as possible between now and then. So are you in a different boat, or how are you feeling?
No, man, I'm with you. I mean, I spent 3 days hanging out with the in-laws because my girlfriend's sister is pregnant. She came into town from the Bay, and we hung out in Hood River and stuff. But I spent 3 days with the in-laws, and I just felt like I was like, man, dude, I am putting off so much work that I'm going to have to do. I mean, I've been sprinting. I mean, it's only six, but like I've been sprinting up until this point since I woke up.
Yep.
I don't know when work is going to stop tonight. Probably when I go to sleep. Like I got so many names that I still got to catch up on and get like scouting reports on and stuff like that. That it's just like, it just feels like there's never enough time. Yep. And then by draft week, I'm just like on zero energy, but hopefully I can keep it up.
I've had a lot of 3 a.m. nights as of late, and I don't expect that to change anytime soon. And then I get to like midway through the day and I'm watching prospects and I'm just like starting to fade. And I'm like, all right, 30 minute nap. Then we get back into it. But I see people like Nagler tweeting out, you're like, you know, we could do the draft like right after the season's done. And I'm like, no. I need as much time as possible to get into this stuff, but I digress. It's a good fun time of year. I love going into all these prospects. I always wish there was more time to get into even more guys, but alas, here we are. It's fun nonetheless. We're going to start with a non-draft topic though. We're going to start by talking about Nate Hobbs of all people. You wrote an article today about Nate Hobbs. It's an interesting one. I want to dig into it with you, but I will let you sort of start with the premise of it.
Yeah. So I was watching the Masters and then news kept breaking that like these slot corners are resigning, getting extensions and all this stuff. I tried to find time to write it last night. I couldn't. So I had to write it today. Andy, the slot corner market has gone up 30%.
It's a big move.
Over a weekend. For non-Pro Bowlers. That's very weird. That's very, very weird. So, like Dak Prescott got $60 million a year, right?
Yep.
To put that in perspective, a 30% jump would have been someone making $78 million per year with no reason why. No steps in between. Okay. So the timeline of this is kind of, so Jordan Lewis signed a 3-year, $30 million contract with the Jacksonville Jaguars this past offseason. If you read the Schefters, the Rappaports, all those guys, right? They, you know, media blast immediately, graphics made. Highest paid slot defender in the history of the NFL, right?
Yep.
This past week, or I guess weekend, Jalen Petrie of the Texans signed a 3-year, $39 million contract. So that's $13 million per compared to Jordan Lewis's $10 million. And then...
And just to put even a pin on that, Jordan Lewis's 3-year, $30 million, it lines right up with Kenny Moore's 3-year, $30 million from a season ago.
And so Moore was a multiple-time Pro Bowler.
Multiple-time Pro Bowler at slot, 3 years, $30 million last year. Jordan Lewis, free agent this year, 3-year, $30 million. So we're even on the same pretty much wavelength there.
Yeah. And then Kyler Gordon got 3 years, $40 million, which is, you know, he got, you know, what is that? $1 million more than Petrie ended up getting. So, I mean, those are essentially the same type of deals. Those two deals, by the way, are extensions. So functionally, they're like 4 year contracts, right? That they're under for the team and all that stuff. The signing bonus comes early. Comparing, it's weird because some people will look at that and they'll say, well, that's a 4 year deal. And how does that compare to Nate Hobbs' 4 year contract? But then some agents will look at that and say, well, you only have to look at the new money, right? Only look at the new money, which is a big debate. When, if you remember Devontae Adams, that was a huge debate with the DeAndre Hopkins contract. And it was like, what do we count as the average per year? Is it the new money or is it over the lifetime of the contract? Because I think DeAndre had he was on like a 2 year deal and then signed an extension and got more money in the back 2 years. And Devontae's camp essentially was like, we're only looking at the last 2 years of D-Hop's contract. That's the only thing that's relevant in terms of negotiations and whatever. It all turned out, I couldn't care less about that conversation anymore, but people see those things in different ways. Andy, what I am here to say is, as I was sitting down watching the Masters, shout out to Rory. That was fun. I usually don't watch golf. Had a great time watching golf. I was watching it in the clubhouse of a golf course, eating some food. My in-laws are big golf people. I'm not. If I try to swing one of those things, they probably told me to go play baseball or something, which if I try to play baseball, they told me to go play golf. My initial thought was, wow, the NFL market is clearly reacting to the Nate Hobbs contract, and they are treating him as a slot. Now, whether that's where he ends up playing for the Packers, I don't think you can say at this point, right? Is there a world where he could play outside corner? Yeah, for sure. If Jair is out and things don't pan out on draft day, I think there's for sure a world where Nate Hobbs could play outside corner for the Packers. At the same time, it sure seems like the NFL is treating that deal as a market setter for the slot position, or at least a previous market setter before the new money of the Petrie and Gordon deals. Whether you treat that, like if you do the 4 year contract thing and you're not just looking at new money, right? Hobbs is still the leader in terms of like an average per year, right? Sure. If you're counting the last year of the rookie deal and then the 3 year extension versus the 4 years that he got as a free agent. This is why these things aren't always super clear. But what you need to know is, the NFL is reacting to the Hobbs contract as if he were a slot. And I think that's a valuable piece of information when, you know, we've had the reports that, you know, he's being considered as an outside corner, which again, I think, you know, if everything goes wrong and, you know, it's a break in case of emergency type of situation, I absolutely could see that. Last year, we were told Jordan Morgan would compete at left tackle, right? Very quickly, he was in at right guard. So like that stuff doesn't always pan out the way that you speak it into existence. So I think
the Zach Thomas and all pro center, yet they've had no inkling and multiple times moving Zach Tom whatsoever. So yes, these things are very fluid throughout the course of the season.
Yeah. So I think really what it boils down to is just, Nate Hobbs, the NFL's treating it as a slot contract, and that should be important to Packers fans. Like that's worth noting. I actually got called. I was running a little late for this because an agent who was representing a guy in the slot market next year hit me up, and that's never a good sign for me. I always get bitched out, Andy, about anything I say about any players this time of year. I assumed he was gonna complain about how I rank some edge rusher or something like that, and I was like, oh no. But no, he represents a slot, and he's like, I think you're the first person who's brought this up, because we got the media blast, right, of all the Jordan Lewis stuff, and you know, he's record setter at the position, all that stuff. No one really gave that credit to Hobbs. And the NFL certainly seems to be treating him like a slot. So again, just an important data point, especially the less than 2 weeks out to go for the draft, where you're like, okay, maybe they could really be open to drafting an outside cornerback in the first round to push Carrington Valentine. Also, Andy, what the hell do we do with Javon Bullard?
That was going to be my follow-up question. So let me start by saying, here's what my expectation is. Again, so many things can change most specifically Jair Alexander in his situation and what they do at outside corner or just corner in general. Like what players, like I think they're going to draft at least one corner. I think even two is a possibility if Jair is in fact gone. But I think there's going to be a lot of change in that position over the course of the next 14 days or so. That could all change the calculus quite a bit. But for me right now, I believe that it's going to be Nixon and Hobbs on the outside and Bullard in the slot on what I would kind of consider big nickel slash almost like base nickel downs, if you want to look at it that way, of like 12 personnel, but I still want nickel on the field. I'm going to use Hobbs and Nixon on the outside, Bullard in the slot with, of course, Evan Williams and Xavier McKinney over the top at safety. And then in more my true nickel, not big nickel, and more maybe what I would kind of consider obvious passing down nickel. Now Hobbs is moving inside, Nixon's playing outside, and then what I would say is TBD on the other side, and that could be Jair Alexander if he's back. That could be Carrington Valentine. That could be insert rookie here, and I would expect they're going to want some competition for that spot at some point. But that's kind of how I expect it to be, is use those two outside guys on early downs and then kick Hobbs in and get basically Bullard off the field in some of those more obvious passing down situations. That's what makes sense to me. What makes sense to me does not always come to fruition. So I'm open to your interpretation as well. And obviously we'll see what the Packers want to decide to do. And again, could change a lot if they grab a couple corners and it changes everything within that room.
Yeah, for sure. And just again, I don't know what the Packers are doing, right? This is just an observation from a league-wide observation of like, okay, teams are now reacting to the Nate Hobbs still. But I do wonder like how you get Bullard on the field, because it does seem like Evan Williams won the safety position. And if you draft a cornerback in the first round, part of the calculus is also, okay, like Javon Bullard is going to the bench and we're kind of waving a white flag on a second year, second round pick type of situation. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. I can also, two more things.
Yep.
One, apparently Hobbs had actually been offered a better is whatever. You can look at average per year. You can look at it like the total money that you can get over. When you're comparing 3-year contracts to 4-year contracts, things get weird, but what most people would consider a better deal. He was offered one by another team and he signed with Green Bay because of Bisaccia. So that's
worth keeping him just for that. Worth keeping him around, keeping that a big assistant contract, that special teams coordinator coach. It's already paid off huge dividends.
So one check mark for Bisaccia. He gets one plus in the columns. The other thing I will say is the Packers have gotten in front of the nickel market a couple times now. I know last season, was it last season. Buddy, the amount of people I had to argue with the Keyshawn deal. Makes and sense. I was like, they are not paying him to be a returner. That is clear. They are paying him to be a nickel. And he's a top 5 paid nickel in the NFL. The market is now completely shifted. When Michael Carter, as a non-pro bowler, signed for basically like $10 million per year with the Jets, that completely reset the nickel market in the NFL. And now we're starting to see this creep. And I don't know how high it goes. I bet we're probably going to have to wait until Kyle Hamilton signs. Like, that's going to be the big one where it's like, this guy was a first-round pick. They clearly want to keep him around. He's playing in the slot constantly. You know, that deal is going to be probably a game-changer for these guys. But the Packers have gotten ahead of, you know, they got ahead of the Michael Carter deal with Jair. Jair is making $4 million less than Michael Carter. He's a much better player than him. I don't even think Michael Carter's contract has or his extension has like officially even kicked in. And then they're getting ahead of the Kyle Hamilton contract with this one. So they've been pretty proactive on some of this stuff.
I think overall that's rather smart. I was going to bring up Trent McDuffie as well, but apparently he just played outside corner all last year after playing slot primarily in 2023. So I guess the calculus has changed on him a little bit as well, but I think they've actually been very smart to do so. I think it's going to continue to go up. I think it's an incredibly challenging position. I think if you can find a good one, they are worth their weight in gold. And to me, if Hobbs ends up being, you know, whatever on the outside, if he can come in and be a really solid slot corner for them, it'll be well worth the price that they paid to bring him in. So,
I mean, much less if like, dude, if he's playing like outside corner, I think like cash flow cash flow like year three, he's making like $10 million a year.
Yeah.
That's an incredible value. Like the Keyshawn stuff, that's one of the more valuable contracts the Packers have. I don't think Packers fans realize that. Dude, $6 million, he's probably the lowest paid veteran starter on the team. And he's a league average cornerback, man. Like, those guys get way more than six. I know post-free agency we talked about this stuff, and I was like, if Keyshawn was on the open market, he'd get the Nate Hobbs deal right now. Like, the Packers
I would agree.
Are paying him half the price, basically, right now. And again, that's credit to them for being a little bit proactive on that stuff and signing him when they did.
Yeah, no, you saw some of the contracts for corners, especially like outside corners. There are some guys that are quite frankly just not very good that went for some pretty solid deals. And Keyshawn would have been, especially at his age, plus kick return ability, plus some other stuff, I think would have gone for higher than some of those players did. So no, I think Green Bay has a very solid contract. I was going to bring up really quick, there was somebody who I was trying to think of. Oh, these are all corners. It doesn't matter. Either way, I definitely saw some deals as of late that I'm like, oh, wow, they're getting paid that much. And Nixon's deal looks like, again, gold in comparison to it. So it's a very solid deal to have. And again, I think Green Bay is very smart with both Hobbs and Nixon to get ahead of it. I want to ask you this, and maybe this is a very stupid question, but it won't be my first and it won't be my last. Do you feel like Green Bay at the corner position, and even maybe not defensive back in its entirety, but some of the inverted cover two stuff is adding into my thought process here. Do you think they're almost trying to get positionless to some extent in the secondary where, well, let's say pie in the sky. Don't think this is going to happen, but let's say they go get Jude Barron at corner, right? You now have Barron, Nixon, Hobbs that all can play outside, inside. You can kind of put them anywhere. I think all three of them to some extent.
They can all blitz is the big thing.
Can all tackle.
Quarterback is, he's looking both ways when he's crossing the street for sure.
Exactly. Like you can actually, all three of them, theoretically, I'm not saying full time, but could go back and play safety at any moment. Evan Williams and Xavier McKinney are about as versatile as safeties as you can get. I'm not saying they can play corner full time or anything like that, but you can do some unique stuff with them as well. It just feels to me like maybe Green Bay is going in this direction of like, hey, it's going to look like this pre-snap, but post-snap, you don't know where these guys are going to end up. And we can pretty much mix and match them anywhere. We can blitz anyone. They can all tackle. We can do anything. And you're not going to know what the heck hit you.
Yeah, 100%. And I think it makes a lot more sense in this defense too. Instead of like if they were playing the quarter stuff, I don't think it would make a lot of sense because you're really just trying to keep that shell up, right? You're trying to slow down the run game with your front. So that, the linebackers and safeties can get in the fit, all those things. But in this defense, you really want to just like mess with quarterbacks, and however you can do it, good for you, right? If your pass rush is good enough, be the 2013 Seahawks and just get after it with four. But if they can't, buddy, we're going to be changing this picture post snap. And it seemed like Halfley was a lot more willing to do that second half of the season.
No, I like it. I like the idea. I like the pieces that they're putting together. I wish Jude Barron would be a Packer. I don't know how you feel about Jude Barron. I like him a lot. I don't think he's going to be there at 23 anyway, but either way, I think they are building a secondary that is very fun, very interchangeable, and can move pieces all around and should be very fun in this Jeff Halfley defense.
Yeah, for sure.
Let's get to some other news and notes from Monday. Actually, I had some interesting stuff. Isaiah Simmons, linebacker, safety, special teams dude, former top 10 draft pick, in for a visit to Green Bay. We are recording this at around 8:30 p.m. Central Time on Monday night. As of yet, we have not heard of any actual signing or anything like that, but an interesting visit for Green Bay. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I think if he signs, he'd come in as a linebacker, first and foremost.
They don't need any safeties.
Right, exactly. So I think he'd come in as a linebacker, probably compete with Christian Welch, maybe even a draft pick. I wouldn't rule out a draft pick at the linebacker position at this point because I don't think Simmons is going to sign on any sort of crazy deal. Welch didn't sign on it was a vet minimum and then like a signing bonus or something like that. It's basically what he got. I think they just want to help depth at the linebacker position. And, linebacker was one of the two spots that we had talked about, or I guess offensive line too. Three spots that we had talked about where the Packers just needed several bodies. The Packers are in a good spot. Like they could play an NFL game today. That is not a worry in terms of like the roster numbers and I guess like starting caliber players, all that stuff that they have on their team, right? But what's going to hurt them down the stretch, or what was going to hurt them down the stretch at the start of the offseason, was just depth at linebacker, depth at cornerback, and then depth on the offensive line. Now what? We've potentially signing two relatively cheap linebackers, big splash free agents at cornerback, if you want to call it that. We just went on that rant about the nickel. And then the offensive line. So I'm not surprised that these are kind of the angles that they're taking. I think Simmons, I don't think he's going to push for the starting job.
No.
I mean, at this point, I'm just assuming McDuffie, Quay, and Cooper are going to be their starting three guys. And then everything behind them is just depth and special team stuff. I saw that Simmons's special teams numbers have actually been pretty good as of late. So, you know, that's a plus. Simmons, obviously, if you guys weren't around for the draft, right? Simmons was this like, you know, safety who's kind of like built like a defensive end, basically. And people were like, I don't know where you play him, but he's super athletic. Well, if you pan out and, you know, your floor is a high special teams player, like that's not the worst thing on like a cheap contract, right?
No, not at all.
You know, it was interesting. I saw Kevin King re-upped with the Atlanta Falcons.
Yep.
He actually had a super high grade on special teams. Like he's kind of like a special teams ace for him now. And he just never did that in Green Bay with like three different special teams coordinators. So good for him. That's crazy that he was able to kind of like reinvent his career.
Big time.
2 years after playing, like pretty catastrophic injuries, all that stuff. So yeah, I mean, sometimes these like highly athletic players, you know, you can't really field them on defense as veterans, right? Maybe you do it during their rookie contracts just because of the amount of cap space that you'll save, all that stuff. But if they land on special teams, you're like, yeah, I want him part of my football team and he could be depth. So I think he makes a lot of sense to bring in Green Bay. I just don't have high expectations for him seeing the field on the defensive side.
No, which is, I mean, a good thing. That's kind of what you want as your potential number five, number six linebacker. To me, this makes all the sense in the world. If I don't think they want to go into the draft having to attack any sort of linebacker position in it with all the other, I think, wants and needs that they have. To me, you can easily go in with the starting three that you just mentioned and McDuffie and Quay and Cooper. Then you've got Hopper, Welch, who, by the way, had zero signing bonus. So he's a full just vet minimum, no signing bonus guy. And then if you can bring in Isaiah Simmons for something similar, Welch and Simmons can be your special teams guy along with Hopper. And you let those three guys battle for next guy up if there's an injury. I don't know that you bring in a couple undrafted free agents to come in and compete, you know, fill some camp and some preseason snaps, maybe a sixth or seventh round guy if your board hits right and there's a guy that you like. But you can basically ignore linebacker and safety at this point in the draft entirely. You don't need anything, can look elsewhere where there's some deep positions like running back, like defensive tackle that you can, you know, not that they need running back either, but you get my point, you know, that they can continue to attack. I think this makes sense. And again, special teams value. They lose Eric Wilson in free agency, was one of their core special teamers. They bring in Christian Welch and, you know, potentially Isaiah Simmons, two new core special teamers. It just fits. It makes sense to me.
You think Rich is doing any work on the draft this year? We got kicker, no punter.
Probably.
He can't take a safety. He might not be able to take a linebacker.
Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe
he's
in a
tough spot. He's just watching returners.
This is why he came back, because there was that rumor that he was like thinking of retiring, and then they gave him a new contract. He's like, fine, I'll come back. They told him that he was going to get a new deal, new extension, new money, and he didn't have to do anything this offseason because they didn't need anything on teams, linebacker, safety anyway. So like, you can take the offseason off. He's in Cancun.
Good work if you can find it.
Very much so. Now he's probably doing something. I'm sure he's helping out in some way, knowing Rich. Other piece of news, John Fitzpatrick, the long wait is officially over, Justice.
Why didn't this happen a month ago? We had this discussion and we're like, why hasn't he resigned yet? This doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. And the only thing is like, I'm wondering if they were haggling over like a 100K signing bonus or something. And Green Bay was like, no. And they're like, we want a 100K signing bonus. And then they finally said like, here's 50K, like just get to the offseason program or something. I don't know. But other than that, it doesn't make any sense that it took this long.
Yeah, the only thing surprising about this move to me is the timing. I don't understand why this didn't happen literally 30 days ago, right?
Yep.
They've done this before, right, with core special teams guys. If they're on an RFA contract, They're like $3.3 million for the right of first refusal. You're not going to find that anywhere. So we're going to let you hit unrestricted free agency and then we'll bring you back. They did it before with, who was the UConn GT guy? Tyler Davis. They did it before with Tyler Davis, but they did that like the first day of free agency.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know why Patrick waited until mid-April to sign, but yeah, I mean, he started out snapping Ben Sims probably last quarter of the season, I would say. He got like 20-something offensive snaps against the Saints. I know that was a blowout. That was one of the reasons that he got a lot of those snaps, but then he also set like a career high in special team snaps the final week of the season against the Chicago Bears. He's a pass blocking tight end. He's a blocking tight end. You're not going to get a whole lot of him yardage wise, but I mean, he's going to help you out on special teams. He's going to help on the protection units. He's going to help you in the run game. Like, just made a whole lot of sense for him to come back, especially considering the Packers didn't have very many tight ends on the roster. I would have assumed, you know, the way the depth chart kind of worked out, Fitzpatrick was tight end three ahead of Ben Sims, you know, the last month or so of the season. It just made sense that he would come back and kind of sort of return to that same role, or at least compete with Ben Sims in the summer to kind of lock down that spot. So yeah, not shocked about this at all. Only thing that's weird is the timing.
Hey everyone, I have to tell you about this new game-changing product that I've been using before a big night out. It's called Pre-Alcohol, and you're going to want to check this out. ZBiotics Pre-Alcohol Prebiotic Drink is the world's first genetically engineered prebiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's a buildup of this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for rough days after drinking. Pre-alcohol produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down, so just remember to make pre-alcohol your first drink of the night. Drink responsibly, and you'll feel your best tomorrow. Listen, I get it. I was a bit on the fence about pre-alcohol initially myself, but when hanging out with my friends during the college basketball tournament, I gave it a shot, and believe me, it's the real deal. And guess what? Spring is here, which means more opportunities to celebrate warm weather, so before you have those drinks on the patio, that tropical vacation, or go to your best friend's wedding, don't forget your ZBiotics pre-alcohol. Drink one before drinking and wake up feeling great the next day. So go to ZBiotics.com/Packaday to learn more and get 15% off your first order when you use Packaday at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with a 100% money-back guarantee, so if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. That's ZBiotics.com/Packaday and use the code Packaday at checkout for 15% off.
Yeah, if you remember Eagles game last year, they had five inactives. Sean Clifford was the emergency third quarterback. Watson was injured. Zane Anderson was injured. Andre Dillard was sort of coming back from injury. And my guess is was inactive due to the injury still. They only needed one healthy scratch in that game, and it was Ben Sims. And Fitzpatrick was active. Ben Sims was inactive. And that was like the very clear moment of like, oh, Fitzpatrick is just ahead of Sims at this point. And that, to your point, is why it was so weird that once the restricted free agent tender was stripped away and you said you can go be an unrestricted free agent, like, it would have surprised me if you like agent shopped him around for a week to see if like there was a better situation. Sure. But like,
but a month?
Yeah, it doesn't make
a month.
Yeah. And I don't know if he got visits. Maybe he just wanted to see the world. I don't know. But yeah, weird
situation. Ayahuasca trip. Yeah. So yeah. We only have two free agents now. We have Tyler Davis. I don't think he's coming back. And Andre Dillard. I don't think he's coming back. So
yeah, I think, I mean, the only thing, if they like strike out in offensive line draft, like entirely, maybe
they got eight picks.
Yeah. They're not
going to have to spend them somewhere.
I know. I'm just saying, like, if somehow something weird happens, maybe you could see Dillard back post draft, but I don't expect it. And then yeah, Davis, if Davis is back, it's going to be on a coaching fellowship, if anything, or something like that. Not on a roster. I'd be pretty surprised at that. The only other piece of news that we got is the official attendees for the 2025 NFL draft in Green Bay. Justice, here's the list: guard Tyler Booker, linebacker Jahad Campbell, offensive lineman Will Campbell, defensive end Abdul Carter, quarterback Jackson Dart, wide receiver Matthew Golden, defensive tackle Mason Graham, wide receiver Travis Hunter, running back Ashton Jeanty, Will Johnson, the corner, wide receiver Tet McMillan, quarterback Jalen Monroe, offensive tackle Josh Simmons, safety Malachi Starks, defensive end Shamar Stewart, quarterback Cam Ward, and defensive end / edge rusher Michael Williams. I was a little worried for a bit there with some of the first announcements were like, Jalen Milroe. And I'm like, oh God, or just is like nobody coming to Green Bay. But they got, you know, more prospects than Detroit had a season ago. And it seems like for the most part, all the guys that you would really want, maybe Shadur being the only real true exception. Everyone else that you kind of want there is going to be there. It looks perfect to me. This feels like a very good group of prospects. You could get some drama as well with Jalen Monroe. And if he, you know, goes end of first somehow, or if he stays in the, you know, room for Friday, but this feels like a good group.
Yeah. Not really surprised by I'm kind of surprised by the volume a little bit because of, so Fox Sports is Jordan Schultz, right? Who he blocked me on Twitter because I was like, how many times are you going to say OBJ is coming to the Packers? You're wrong every single time. But
could still be. You never know.
He tweeted out only like 8 to 10 invites were going to be sent out of, for the draft in Green Bay. And we got 17 guys who are coming. Yeah. So double that, coffee boy. How dare you? Yeah, I mean, 12 of the top 20 guys from the consensus board are coming. All of the guys outside of Jalen Milroe are top 30 guys on the consensus draft board. So, like, there, Milroe is really, like, the only surprise. I don't know why Milroe signed up, man. You're just going to, like, the amount of screenshots that are going to be taken to your face. I don't think he's going to go in the first round.
Do you have to have, like, a guarantee at that point? I mean, I get this is not the NBA.
There's guys who slip all the time.
Yeah.
Ain't no guarantees. No way. No way.
I mean, like, did he get like a nudge from a team of like, hey, you're not making it past us. Like if you're there, like the Steelers, like if you're there, we're taking you sort of thing. I don't know.
I guess. I don't know. I wouldn't have signed up for that. I think that's why Shadur didn't go, right? Like Travis is going. Shadur Sanders isn't, because I think he knows, like, he's the story of the draft, right? Yeah. So how about we control this a little bit? Like, some interesting guys going. Territorio McMillan, right? Goot was the only general manager at his private workout in Arizona. Worth noting. He's the wide receiver out of Arizona, obviously. Guys on visits that have been in Green Bay prior, I guess. Michael Williams, the DN out of Georgia. Shamar Stewart, the DN out of Texas A&M. Matthew Golden, the wide receiver out of Texas. And then Josh Simmons, the left tackle out of Ohio State. Probably good news on the Josh Simmons front.
Yeah, it's an interesting one.
Because he is a risky player, right? He's a guy who's coming off of a patellar tendon tear. He worked out at Ohio State's pro day, didn't do the testing numbers and stuff like that. But, you know, he was doing some of the offensive line workouts and stuff without a brace, all that stuff. I don't know what's going to happen with the Phoenix Suns because they obviously just changed over at head coach. But his brother is the head strength and conditioning coordinator of the Phoenix Suns. So that probably.
I was wondering where you're going with that.
Yeah, just the random Phoenix Suns insert. Well, I mean, he coached for the Bucks, right? That got Budenholzer or whatever.
Budenholzer did cracked.
Yeah, so I'm sure you guys have opinions about that.
Well, yeah, I mean, if anything, I mean, it's not like anything's going great for the Bucks either. So, you know, I don't know that there's any, you know, real anything. But I mean, the Suns are now in what, 3 coaches in like 22 months or something like that from, you know, who is it? Monty Williams, Frank Vogel, and then Budenholzer. And now they'll be on number 4 in the near future here. That is this is just classic new owner, new shiny toy, lots of money. Go get Kevin Durant, go get Bradley Beal, and, you know, go get a bunch of new coaches. It's all going to work. You don't need backups. You don't need depth. You don't need rotational players. And, you know, certainly Bradley Beal is not overpaid, you know, exceptionally so. Well, we don't need to talk about that, but yeah.
As far as the guys who aren't in Green Bay, right? So I wrote this up. So these are the guys in the top 20, right? Who aren't in Green Bay. Shadur, I think that makes a lot of sense. Again, I think he probably wants to control his narrative. He's going to be the story of the draft. Who knows where the heck he's going to go? We could see, you know, an Aaron Rodgers type of fall, all that stuff. I think it makes sense for him not to go. If I were his representation, I'd be like, hang out with your family.
What do you think
the
best spot is for him?
Well,
you think about it. I think, oddly, Pittsburgh is a very solid spot for him.
Yeah. Because, honestly, I don't think he's not a developmental guy. Like, I think his value is going to be he's accurate and you can get him on the field early, right? It's not all the traits and stuff. So you want to get him on the field early. And there's not that many open spots in the NFL right now outside of the Pittsburgh Steelers. So, yeah, I mean, I guess that one makes a lot of sense.
with his accuracy, if you're the Miami Dolphins, would you just have a little bit of insurance?
I don't know, man. Like, at some point, some of these teams, like, they got to – I mean, like, the Saints is another one.
Yep.
Dog, if I'm Shedeur Sanders, I don't want to be tied to the dead cap of this other quarterback.
Yeah.
Like, I would try to actively not be a New Orleans Saint. Yeah, like, it's just there is no light at the – or if there's a light at the end of the tunnel, it's very long. And it's almost your veteran contract. So I want no parts of that. Armand Membu, the right tackle out of Missouri, isn't coming. Tyler Warren, the tight end out of Penn State. Jalen Walker, the DN out of Georgia. Kelvin Banks, the offensive lineman out of Texas. Jahdae Barron, the corner out of Texas. Mike Green, the DN out of Marshall. Colston Loveland, the tight end out of Michigan. I think those last two make a little bit more sense. You know, Mike Green obviously had the pretty public sexual assault allegation stuff that came up from both high school and UVA. I don't know how much that's going to impact his draft stock. Again, like I've said before, you don't have to trust the NFL to kind of draw your moral line in the sand or anything like that. But the way the NFL seems to be treating it, based off of the conversations that I've had, are basically like UVA didn't want to deal with the PR of it, and other schools kind of would have let it pass, I guess, or don't believe that the situation played out the way that is kind of being perceived. Again, I don't know enough about this stuff. That's just it's just not going to impact this draft stock, in my opinion. But I get why you would want to avoid television cameras if the possibility of slipping because of, you know, that off-field reasons would be on the table, right? And then Colston Loveland is dealing with a, I believe, a shoulder injury that he had surgery on after the season. Another guy on here, like a couple people have hit me up and are like, talk about this because no one else is talking about it. Harrison, what's his name?
Yeah, Maxwell.
Maxwell Harrison, the kid out of Kentucky. A student from University of Kentucky posted back in 2022, a TikTok of, you know, it basically said, you know, hey, this guy raped me and the school isn't doing anything. And then posted a documented, request basically
complaint.
I think it was first degree rape, first degree burglary. And that was dated 2021. Right. And then after the combine, when, you know, Maxwell Harrison runs faster than everyone, all that stuff, and people are celebrating him on social media, she comes back and she's like, hey, maybe don't put this guy on a pedestal. He's got some bad stuff in his background. You know, she in the comments of that post said, like, yeah, like 5+ people have come forward and had similar or same stories, basically. So Maxwell Hurston's a guy. I don't know what the heck is going to happen to him on draft day, or if whatever general manager takes him is going to have to speak up to it or whatever.
But just to add on top of that, it, correct me if I'm wrong on this, because I did a deep dive into Hurston recently. And like, I usually like check this stuff out, and I check in my handy dandy big, you know, Dane Brugler draft guide, which is incredible. And he usually covers this stuff. Not a single mention. I go and look on NFL.com, and usually Lance Zierlein and those guys do a huge breakdown if there's any stuff like this, like they would with Mike Green and that situation. Not a single mention of this. And I even do a Google search. I do Maxwell Harrison sexual assault, not a single mention. And I'm like, what the hell am I missing? And then I actually saw an article that you had, I think on Acme Packing Company, that just said something to the effect of also like, be aware of this tweet or something to that extent. It was just kind of like a note at the bottom of an article. And I clicked on the tweet and I'm like, oh, well, there it is. But it is, I'm not certainly saying anything one way or the other, but it is unique in the fact that this is a weird situation or a rare situation in which it's just, as of right now, living as a TikTok / tweet from one person and is not out there anywhere. And that's why, again, I went back and looked at it and I'm like, I don't know what to do with this. And I like, this is just sort of the weird, bizarre world that we live in. And I feel comfortable, obviously, talking about where we're at with it. But it's just like, yeah, I don't even know how you like discuss it in a situation where it's a single social media post. There does seem to be some legitimate documentation on that social media post, but it's literally completely not covered anywhere. It's just, it's an interesting situation.
Yeah, I'm with you, because usually this stuff gets picked up or at least discussed a little bit, and the Hairston stuff just non-existent. Doesn't seem to be sticking. For, again, a TikTok that was made 3 years ago with documentation that came from 4 years ago. So it's not like a...
Right.
You know, I, there's certain times we're walking in dangerous territory, but I'm going to do it. There's certain times where certain situations, at least the framing of it, perceived to be like extortion attempts, right? So like the Dak Prescott situation, I think the one that was over the last year, the framing of it sure seemed like an extortion situation because he just signed like a big contract, right? This does not fall under that, right? I mean, yeah. This is years ago documentation, all that stuff, pretty consistent, all that. So yeah, Hairston is a guy. I haven't done a ton of background work on him. Like, I didn't bring it up with like the agent that I just got off the phone with, because he hasn't just like been on a visit in Green Bay or anything. But
right,
it is certain something. Like, if the Packers take him, I definitely want to know like what the heck the background was like and all that stuff. But yeah, no one's talking about it. I mean, even the Wyatt stuff came out like well before the Packers took him. When they brought in George Pickens on a visit, like that stuff had already been bubbling around. Even we mentioned Isaiah Bond, right?
Yep.
Obviously, I didn't know it was to this extent. I don't know how many people knew it was to this extent, because that incident happened in February. Most of the stuff I was discussing was just more like he just kind of like drains on your program and stuff like that. But I mean, when guys are not fun to be around or have red flags or stuff like that, like, it, the NFL talks, right?
Yeah.
And that stuff gets out. The Mike Green stuff had been public by the combine, right? I mean, he had to answer questions about that at the podium and all that. And
yep.
All that stuff was known, at least to me. I can only say like my perception of this stuff, like the Mike Green allegations were known pretty much as soon as he was discussed as like a first round pick. Because I was super high on him, and people were like, all right, here's the thing. we have to, like, you get the tap on the shoulder, and it's like, I want you to know this so that, you know, you don't look like a dumbass in front of everyone when you're saying that he's a top five type of talent. Like, oh,
right.
Okay, that is very good to know. But yeah, the Hairston stuff, I don't want to ramble about it too much. The Hairston stuff is very weird and unique in that, like, no one seems to want to discuss it at all,
yeah,
or even acknowledge it. Yeah, it's weird.
And I'm not a strong enough professional to know what to do in that like situation of like, obviously I don't want to discount anything for any reason. I also don't want to make more of it if it's not, again, corroborated anyway. Talking about these things is such a no man's land situation. Yeah. It's a no win situation, right? Because, you know, I think again, we're just talking about what we know and what we don't know. We're not saying anything accusatory or supporting or not supporting anyone here. It's just that the lack of anything anywhere outside of that one tweet / TikTok is, it's just, you don't see it. Usually if there's something like that, it catches fire very quick, either whether from like a viral standpoint or just it gets caught up in some of the news state, and it's just, there's nothing there. It's like it never happened, but it's there. It's so strange, but we digress. Yeah. We move on.
The ultimate point I was trying to make, Maxwell Hairston, I get why you want to be at the draft on draft day, because yes, I could see him being a guy who starts falling and then people are like, wait, why is he falling? And then he's the story of day two of the draft or whatever. So,
yeah, it's a very interesting situation. Hopefully not true. Hopefully whatever. But yeah, that we'll let that figure out itself in the court of law and everything else, if that ever does come to light. Wanted to talk to you. Any updates? Any interesting? I know there's a Canadian quarterback on a top 30 visit. Anyone that caught your eye in any of the more recent top 30 visits?
Yeah, I mean, he came from a school I'd never heard of. Laurier, I assume that's how you say it. Wilfrid Laurier. I don't have the all 22 film on him. He has a couple cutups that he posted on YouTube himself. Looks like he actually has a pretty decent arm, which I was surprised by. Usually the Canadian guys are just little accurate dudes. I definitely went back to my XFL eyes and had to like reframe my brain on looking at some of this stuff, because it just looks so goofy, man. Like the extra 10 yards in the middle of the field, 20 yard end zones, it's a little bit wider. The goalpost is like 5 yards into the 20 yard end zone. You know, the extra man on the field, guys are all going in motion like it's arena football. Like, it's a little crazy to look at, but traits wise, like the arm and stuff like that, pretty good zip. That was pretty cool. They brought in Ty Felton from Maryland, a wide receiver. I was actually looking at the other Maryland receiver when I watched games where Maryland was on offense. So I don't have much information on him other than this guy runs really fast. He's a little bit smaller than the Packers usually like. But I do think it's interesting. I mean, the guys they brought in, like Golden, Ibuka, Bond, Felton, these aren't the big body receivers I kind of would have assumed. Like, I would have assumed Green Bay's bringing in Jaden Higgins or Alike Umanor or guys like that. Defensive tackles, I can't remember if these guys had been brought in last time or not, but I guess let's talk about them. Tyleek Williams and TJ Sanders. Tyleek Williams from Ohio State. He's like 330. But I think he's got enough juice he can play three tech. He's not a bad pass rusher. He's just probably like an okay pass rusher at the NFL level. Really good run stopper. His ability to take on double teams is really good. TJ Sanders is kind of like the opposite of Tyleek Williams. Like, Sanders' defense is so aggressive with stunts and twists and all of those things that, like, he ends up two gaps away from where he's lined up pretty frequently. And he's a really good athlete. He's like 6'4", 290 and change. He plays with a little bit too high of pad level to kind of be like a consistent, like, stack and shed guy. I think that's where he's going to need to be better at the next level. But I definitely see him as a three technique, who can get after the passer, who can, you know, penetrate, who can move laterally, do all these stunts, stuff like that. Sometimes they play him a lot at the nose on passing downs, right? Like a head up nose. Sometimes, this is what I was going to say, they stand him up and he's doing the spinner stuff. I mean, he's doing the Za'Darius Smith, like, you know, you're faking the like basketball crossover and then, you know, you're bursting. Like, that stuff's pretty fun. Elijah Roberts, DN from SMU. He was a transfer guy. He was at Miami for 3 years. Rhett Lashley ended up going to SMU from Miami. He ended up following him. Rhett Lashley is a longtime college coach, if you guys aren't aware of that. Roberts is a big boy. He's like 285 pounds. I haven't gotten the chance to see him because I've been so damn busy. Really interested to turn on the tape because, like, athletically, like, there's not that much different between him and Za'Darius if you just put, like, the RAS cards next to each other.
Sure.
So you got to be mindful of that, right? Like, the defensive line, in my opinion, like, is where the biggest sliding scale is in terms of athleticism. I don't find that much value looking at a RAS card in terms of, like, what this guy actually looks like on the field athletically. Because if we're comparing, there are guys who are 230 pounds, right, at defensive end, you know, during the draft process and are counting against these relative athletic scores. So, what does that do to put, you know, the framing of who Elijah Roberts is as an athlete at defensive end, you know, in the center? So that doesn't really make sense to me. I can't wait to look at him, but I haven't taken a check at him yet. Trey Amos came in, the cornerback out of Ole Miss. He was at ULL for 3 years, started his last year there, ended up transferring to Alabama, was a backup at Alabama behind two high draft picks in Terrion Arnold and Kool-Aid McKinstry. So I'm not really holding that against him. And then transferred to Ole Miss, ended up becoming like an all-SEC player. He has something crazy. Like, it's like he started like 24 games, but he has like 35 PBUs and like 8 interceptions, right? Yeah. Pretty incredible numbers. I haven't really studied him. I've watched Ole Miss's defense, but I'm usually looking at like the end zone cutups and stuff like that instead of the all 22, you know, overhead stuff. So I'm not really paying attention to cornerbacks. I'll get to them this week. Definitely want to get all the draftable guys, scouting reports on APC. We have a lot of them right now, but not a couple of these late ones. So
I just did Amos, I didn't do a deep dive on or anything, but just some quick notes. Impressive size and length, able to use his length and strength to jam and contest a ton of passes, 13 pass breakups in 2024 alone. Up and down as a tackler, natural at the point of attack, just being able to, again, break up all those passes, no panic, just a very, again, natural corner when you get to some of those either jump ball or contested catch situations. Ran a 4.43 40, but I didn't think he looked that fast on tape. There were some plays playing off where he clicked and closed and it felt like he was fast, or like he looked 4.43 40, but in other phases it looked more of like a 4.5 guy maybe. Again, not that there's a ton of difference there, but just looked a tick slower to me on tape. Was fantastic on deep throws down the field per PFF, less than a 19% completion rate on throws over 20 yards down the field. Off coverage, I didn't think was his best forte, but again, closes on the ball pretty quick. I think overall good corner, just didn't see like a ton of like all pro slash pro bowl upside, but I thought he, again, starting caliber corner easily based on his tape. So just again, some easy notes on Amos from when I watched him the other day.
I think it's really interesting. Like, I get it's not even a cluster because it's only two guys, right? But I think it's interesting, like the range that they're bringing in these corners, right? Like, they're not looking at Jahdae Barron. They brought in Savone Revel.
Yeah, it's a weird, yeah. Savone, yeah.
And Trey Amos, who are ranked 39th and 40th on the consensus draft board. So maybe those are, you know, trade back targets or something like that. I mean, hey, maybe, you know, Revel's medical clears and they're just like, yeah, we're not worried about that. He's a top 20 player in this draft. Go grab him. Did text a guy in the league today. He was trying to figure out who the Packers were going to take. Pardon for the delaying. Yeah.
Take your time. This is worth it.
He was talking about this stuff. Said, think Revel is going to 100% be in play when we talked about the 23 pick. So maybe a guy you guys want to watch. We have 21 of the 30 visits reported right now. There's probably three Packers draft picks in this list. If you guys want to dig through it.
And some UDFA guys potentially on there too.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, I mean, we got it pinned up on APC. We got scouting reports on most of the draftable guys at this point. Going to try to get more as we progress through this. I'll probably get a Buka up tonight or tomorrow. But, buddy, draft season is a sprint, man. It is a sprint.
All right, so I wanted to kind of wrap up with this. I went through, I did this last year as well. And you just look at historically what Green Bay looks at in the first round. I don't know if you had the chance to listen to this episode, obviously no pressure, but I'll just give you the details just in case. What I consider premium positions, quarterback, offensive tackle, defensive end, defensive tackle, corner. Green Bay has got, so these are the last 23 first round picks. I'm including Jordy Nelson and Kevin King as first round picks because they were the first pick in their respective drafts. They moved down from the first round early into second round. So I'm considering them in this.
No Christian Watson.
No Christian Watson. I did not.
I would have thrown Christian in there, to be fair. I
probably could have put Christian in as
well. He was first pick of the second, right? And they traded
Was it first pick of the second round? I thought it was like a few picks in, but I could
somewhere be around there.
Maybe it was 33, 34, somewhere in there. And I probably could have put him in there as well. It's not going to change the calculus. Oh, it does change the calculus for one of these. All right. So premium positions, if you're not including wide receiver, they took 18 out of the 23 were premium positions. If you include wide receiver in that, which I would now, it's 19 out of 23 with Jordy included, 20 out of 24 if you include then Christian Watson in there as well. Relative athletic scores, their average score since taking Aaron Rodgers, which is again the 23 start point, 8.3 is the average. 11 out of 23 have been 9 or higher. 16 out of 23 have been 8 or higher. 18 out of 23 have been 7 or higher. 21 out of 23 have been 6 or higher. 23 out of 23 have been 5 or higher. But their last 12 have been 8 or above, and 14 of the last 15 have been 8 or above. 22 out of 23 have been from a Power 5 conference. The only exception is, of course, Jordan Love. That would be another one where Christian Watson would add to that list of non-Power conference guys. But for this, Jordan Love was the only one. 20 out of 23 were aged 22 or younger, so 21 or 22 years old. They're only ones that were not, did not go so great. Justin Harrell, Demarius Randall, and Devontae Wyatt, give or take how you feel about Devontae Wyatt at this point in time. So then obviously you get to some of their position specific, you know, potential threshold slash metrics as well. But usually premium position, high relative athletic score, 22 or under, Power 5 conference is what you're generally going for. By the time Green Bay got on the clock of the consensus top 50 guys that were actually on the clock when Green Bay was selecting last year. If you consider Graham Barton an interior offensive lineman and then take him off the list, there were three guys left: Tyler Guyton, Jordan Morgan, and Kingsley Suamataea. And Suamataea did not go until the end of round two, so he was never probably in play at that point. And they took one of them. So I did the same thing this year, Justice, and I narrowed it down. And I'm like, here we go. Let's do this. Premium positions only. I did include wide receiver. I took out quarterback. RAS over 8, Power 5 conference, 22 or under. How many left? How many are we going to eliminate here? Well, because nobody did any damn testing this year, Justice, we're left with 29 players on that list. 23 players on that list, excuse me, that were in the top 50. I went 10 through 50. Anybody in the top 10 is going to be gone. So I went 10 through 50, 23 players left. All right. Of the players that I think that are in Green Bay's range, the remaining players were Tet McMillan, Will Johnson, Kelvin Banks, Shamar Stewart, Michael Williams, Matthew Golden, Kenneth Grant, Josh Simmons, Walter Nolan, Derek Harmon, Donovan Ezeraku, who technically doesn't based on the thresholds. You could take him off if you wanted. Emeka Igbuka, Luther Burden, Max Harrison, also doesn't hit the weight threshold. You could take him off as well. And Landon Jackson. So those are the guys that would potentially be on that list. Revel is not for the age. I think he's 23, if I remember.
He's older. He did 5 years because he had
he turned 24. So not only is he not 23,
He was JUCO 2020, but never played. And then he played 2021. Yeah.
Yeah. So they've only drafted 3 23-year-olds. They've never drafted, well, at least in this time frame, never drafted a 24-year-old. That would be out of their
norm. Wyatt was very close.
He turned 24 that year. Also non-Power 5 conference. And of course, is coming off the injury as well. So he did not make that list. But of that list, Tet McMillan, Will Johnson, Kelvin Banks, Shamar Stewart, Michael Williams, Matthew Golden, Kenneth Grant, Josh Simmons, Walter Nolan, Derek Harmon, Ezeraku, Igbuka, Luther Burden, Max Harrison, Landon Jackson. Anybody from that list that you'd be like, no, this is a clear no, or that you feel like should not be on that list in some way?
I think Burden is a slot.
I eliminated him on my final list because I just don't think he's going to be their type.
Yeah. That's really the only one that Harrison, again, I just don't know, right? I don't know how the NFL is going to treat that situation. Ezeraku, I think we talked about him before, right? Like, he's a really complicated player in terms of like what you're looking at and how that translates to the NFL level, and people are going to have different opinions. But outside of that, I mean, you mentioned Kenneth Grant, right? Grant's on that.
Yeah, I took off Burden. I took off Simmons and Banks. Maybe that is foolish of me. The Simmons with the injury, an offensive tackle. I don't know. I
would never be surprised if this team takes a left tackle, especially in the situation that they're in right now, where both tackles are coming up on free, end of the year contract. Simmons also played right tackle a little bit.
True.
At San Diego State, for whatever that's worth.
All right. We'll put those on there as well. I'm going to take off Harrison and Ezeraku, both for height, weight, and then Harrison due to the off-field stuff. So you have 12 players that are left in that situation. Josh Simmons and Kelvin Banks, who we just mentioned. Number 10 on my list was Landon Jackson. 9 was Emeka Igbuka. 8 was Walter Nolan. 7 was Tet McMillan. 6 was Matthew Golden. 5 was Kenneth Grant. 4 was Michael Williams. 3 was Will Johnson. 2 was Derek Harmon. And 1 was Shamar Stewart. That's how I went. Now, again, who's there? Who the hell knows? That's a tougher thing to predict. But that's how I kind of limited it down based on historical trends. It's not saying that, you know, they have drafted a few non-Power 5 guys. They have drafted a few 23-year-olds. They have drafted some guys that have been under 8 RAS. So it's not an exact science here, but if you're using trends, you get pretty damn close to it usually.
Yeah, I think at that point, you're looking at maybe a couple spoilers, right? You're looking at Revel, Amos, Tyreek Williams maybe getting drafted a little bit earlier than you expect. I think I would still scratch off Banks off of that board that you just mentioned, because I think he's going to be a guard at the next level. I don't think the Packers are really interested in drafting a right guard.
You don't want all Banks left side of the line, Kelvin at left tackle, Aaron at left guard. What more do you want in life than that, Justice? You're not fun.
I just don't think that he's going to be a left tackle at the next level, but I think he's going to be a really good guard. I just don't think that the team is really interested in spending all that, all those assets. I mean, how do you even, like, at that point, like, how do you even get Jordan Morgan on the field, right?
Yeah, that's why I eliminated sort of both of them to some extent. Is I just feel like they've got options there. But you're right in the fact that it would never surprise me. But I don't think that's going to be the direction. Just gut feel on my end, if nothing else.
Yeah. No, I mean, that list is pretty damn close. If you gave me 2 hours to work on a list, that's probably about as close to what I would create.
I wish it was like last year where it'd be like, yep, these are like the three or four or five guys that make the most sense. Like without some of the testing for some, what's that? Yeah.
It's pretty open-ended for the Packers. Yeah. I mean, the way their needs and all that stuff kind of shake out and where they're going to be picking in the draft, it's going to be really hard. I mean, I don't think anyone's pinned down. I mean, outside of like maybe Shadur to Pittsburgh, like I don't think anyone is like, yes, this team is probably going to go in this direction outside of like the top three. Does anyone feel good about any picks after the top three? I think.
Are we set on who's going 2 and 3? We know, I think the top.
I know who they are. I don't know which one's going to go two and which one's going to go three. Yeah. It's going to be Hunter and Abdul Carter. I have a pretty strong feeling on that. I did think it was really interesting. So the Rams never bring anyone on visits. Did you know that? That's like,
I did not know that.
So the Rams never bring
a weird ass team.
They make no sense to me. Did you know? So the GM that they hired from Jacksonville hired from the Rams was never in LA. The assistant GM was never in LA. He worked offsite. He still lived in St. Louis.
They're a crazy team. They've done an unbelievable job drafting after the FM picks. Sort of situation. They effed them picks and still found unbelievable draft choices somehow. Like, it needs to be studied.
Yeah, they're a weird team. But so the Rams are picking after the Packers. Do you know who they had in on a visit?
Jackson Dart.
Shamar Stewart.
Shamar Stewart, okay.
I think they brought in three guys. It was Bond, obviously. Like, we all know why Bond is doing the tour right now, right?
Yep.
I think it was Milroe and then Shamar Stewart. They brought those three guys in.
Interesting.
Like, weird. So you think Shamar might fall down in the draft. And I just see that and I'm like, Packer. Throw the G on him right now. Let's do it. Sign him up. Sign me up.
Wait, on who?
Shamar Stewart.
For the Packers?
Yes.
Why do you want Shamar Stewart for the Packers?
I like him. What do you mean?
Sorry.
The DM that I need.
I thought you said Shadur Sanders. My apologies. No. My apologies. I thought for some reason I had
Shadur. Yeah.
I went Jackson Dart, and then we got to Jalen Milroe, and then you said Shamar, and I thought Shadur. And so that is my, I'm like, what are we doing here? I'm like, what am I lost on? Sorry.
There's two Shamars in this draft class. They're both from A&M, and there's a Shadur. Get it together, Andy.
It's on
We're 2 weeks out for draft day.
When we get to this many 3 a.m. mornings in a row, there are going to be multiple more moments like this. So that I'm chalking it up to that. I'm getting a mulligan and accident forgiveness on this, but sorry. Okay, so they brought in Shamar Stewart for a visit.
Yes.
Gotcha. And the Rams pick right after Green Bay?
I think they're like 26 or something.
Yeah, okay, a few picks after Green Bay. Yeah.
So okay. Thought that was interesting.
Don't let them get past. There are so many people, Justice, so many people that do not want Shamar Stewart in Green Bay.
Oh, I'm aware.
So many people.
That's why I wear it on my chest. I'm like, I like that guy.
I do too.
He's fun. He's a better pass rusher than you guys think.
Do you, if Michael Williams and Shamar Stewart's on the board, you're going Shamar?
I'm going Shamar, especially with what the Packers have right now. Again, I think Michael is he's athletic, but he's a run defender.
He's a run defender first.
Yeah. And Shamar, I've seen more pass rush juice. I don't care what. Show me all the grass. I don't care. I'll ignore him.
It's what you're going to become.
Shamar Stewart is a good pass rusher.
I don't totally
care what the grass say.
I turned him on. Like, just it took me like five reps to be like, yep, I don't need to see much more. Like, I fell in love immediately. Not to the same. I'm not saying they're apples to apples players, but very similarly, how I fell in love very quickly with Jared Verse last year. Just the way that they played football. Again, not saying it's the exact same type of player or anything, but fell in love with Jared Verse immediately as an edge rusher, fell in love immediately with Shamar Stewart as a pass rusher this year.
Yeah. I like him.
We're on the same page. I think that's all I got. Anything else you want to go over?
No.
You want to get back in the film? I was going to say, you want to go watch tape. I can see the look.
I want to, but yeah, I have to.
I know you do.
I won't be able to go to sleep if I don't get a couple answers.
You're only at 7:09. I'm at 9:09. Mm-hmm. I have 2 less hours than you do, my friend. Plus, mm-hmm. I got to edit this thing and take all of your stupid statements out.
I'm still out right now.
I have to spend the next hour taking out my, Shamar Stewart, Shadur Sanders flub. So, I'm going to keep that in. I'm very much keeping that. I don't have time to edit anything. I can't thank you enough. These are always incredible conversations. We will do it again next week, draft week. I am putting you on the clock for your official prediction next Monday. So get ready for that. Should be fun. I will talk to you then. What do you got cooking at Acme Packing Company?
Buddy, we're hitting every single one of these visits things. I want to get up all the scouting reports on these draftable guys that they brought in on visits. Just so that we have them and all that stuff. We're getting all the breaking news. I just wrote up the Hobbs thing, right? I think I want to do like a contract comparison at some point this week, just laying out like, again, the new money, right? So it'll be Hobbs's 4-year deal versus their, these other cornerbacks, 3-year deals, what it looks like with the extension, right? So you guys can kind of see what that nickel market looks like. And so I can show you guys the Packers did get ahead of, this rising situation. And then as always, like the news, we have the Packers mock draft going. We're doing 5.0. These are the last four that we've had, Andy. First three rounds. Derek Harmon, Benjamin Morrison, Savion Williams. Okay. Derek Harmon, Trey Harris, Charles Grant. Okay. Derek Harmon, Jaden Higgins, Charles Grant.
Okay.
Walter Nolan, a switch up. The first time we haven't picked Derek Harmon in the first. Jaden Higgins. Charles Grant in the third round for the third straight time. I don't know why we've latched on to Charles Grant, but it sure seems like people like defensive tackle in the first round, wide receiver in the second, offensive lineman in the third.
I'm very much against when there's already been a player with that name in the NFL. Charles Grant, defensive end, Saints, will always be the Charles Grant. So yeah. I'm sorry. Also, there's a Jalen Reed in this class. I'm sorry. I don't care how good Jalen Reed is. I can't have a Jaden Reed and a Jalen Reed. I'm already flubbing Shamar Stewart and Shadur Sanders. I can't have a Jaden Reed and a Jalen Reed on the same team. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm with you. One weird thing, because I have to write up these mock drafts after every single time that they pick Charles Grant, right? Gone deep into the Charles Grant archives. He wrestled at 220.
This Charles Grant or the previous Charles Grant?
William and Mary offensive lineman Charles Grant wrestled at 220 in the Virginia State Championship his senior year. And now he's a 300-plus pound offensive lineman. Whoever the William and Mary strength and conditioning coach is a saint. And I don't want to have to look at whatever these guys were eating every day.
Yeah.
If you watch the William and Mary film too, like all those guys are like 280 plus. Like they're feeding these boys. The S&T probably, he's a demon. Whoever's running strength and conditioning in the spring for these guys in the winter, he's an animal.
Would you rather have to put on weight or lose weight? Like it's like a significant amount. Not like we're not talking 5 pounds here one way or the other. Like
lose.
Yeah.
The way you, dude, like people don't realize, man, like the way you have to eat to be an active member of a football team and do all this training and stuff and also put on 50 pounds.
Do you know who Braun Strowman is?
Things. No, I don't know who that is.
He's a professional wrestler. He's they call him the monster among men or the monster among monsters now, I think is what it is. He is a behemoth of a human being. I think he was world's strongest man competitor or something like that. Let me see his exact height weight here. He's 6'8", 335. And I listened to an interview of him once of his diet. And it is just like,
that's to stay steady.
Oh, yeah.
That's to stay steady.
That's not
you're trying to put on weight.
Yeah.
Like you're doing things like you're eating sandwiches and drinking milk right before bed so that you can sleep so that you don't have to be moving around and feeling bloated during the day. And you're just like, clock that. I need to eat right before I sleep so that I don't feel the weight of what I'm putting into my body. Like, nah, I think I'd rather lose weight than put on weight if it's for football purposes. If it's, hey, you got to put on 3 pounds, I could have fun with that. If it's, I got to put on 50, some disgusting things are about to happen. That is not cool.
It is not. It is not at all. Justice, I can't thank you enough. Go follow him over at Acme Packing Company, at JUMSQ on social media. We'll be back next week talking together about all things Packers. I'm sure you're probably going to be on Cheesehead TV tomorrow again, would be my guess. Usually that's the drill.
Yeah, that's usually how this thing works out. So unless things change up, we'll see what Negler does. But
go check that out as well. They do tremendous work over there as well. But we'll be back next week. I'll see you guys tomorrow. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.